we got that out. How awesome is that? Yes, 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 yes. All right, so before we start today, so we have just completed Black History Month, where we were talking each week about some of the luminaries from the New Thought Movement and Religious Science from the African-American, All right, so, well, we have moved into a new phase. We are in Women's History Month. Yes, and so I'm a woman. A bunch of us in the room are women. And I thought that we would do the same thing because it's interesting to honor some of the people I want. I got really excited when I realized we were going to do this, and I thought I could introduce you to some of the people that maybe, some of the women who've contributed to this movement that maybe we haven't heard of or know of. And so so today we're going to start with Ernest Holmes, who was the founder of Religious Science, his personal practitioner. So we're going to talk about Vatura Papke. And there she is. Isn't she pretty? So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Vatura Papke. No, we don't have a video, so you're going to have to hear me talk about it. So this is her. So I want to read it because I want to get this right. So anyone who has studied the history of religious science knows that Ernest Holmes only slowly and somewhat reluctantly came to embrace the idea of ministers and churches. Like, he didn't think this philosophy was going to be a religion. He thought it was going to be a philosophy of living that would support everybody in all religions, right? So that was the idea. He, however, did love and embrace another facet of science of mind. He loved practitioners. Practitioners were the heart of religious science, and from the very start of the Institute of Religious Science back in 1927, there have always been practitioners. Practitioners manned and staffed the Department of Healing. They gave lectures and classes at the Institute from the first week. Practitioners contributed to the Science of Mind magazine, and Ernest Holmes' own practitioner was his wife, Hazel. Upon her death, he began to work with another gifted practitioner, Vatura Papke, who was to influence two generations of practitioners, and I would say probably by now three or four generations of practitioners. They're still talking about this woman. Ernest and Vatura would often sit out on the steps of the Institute talking to each other, speaking of God, and even talking to random strangers passing by. Vatura is remembered for her passion, her joy, her wisdom, her sparkling sense of humor, and her infectious love and trust in God. She was born in 1901 in Kansas City, Missouri. She was born into a well-to-do family that deeply supported the Baptist Church. Vatura was always somewhat of a spiritual rebel, and at the very young age of 13, she refused to attend the Baptist Church anymore. Reluctantly, after a huge family fight, she stayed in the church until she was 18. Anybody have that experience? Okay, but as soon as she reached adult age, she quit. Vatura said, "They wanted me to believe that I was a sinner, and I could never believe that." Her life of luxury came to an abrupt end when her beloved father passed. Her mother and Vatura had to leave the family mansion and reside in a one-bedroom apartment. Vatura's life bounced around for a few years, a brief time as a fifth-grade teacher, college, expelled from college for violating a curfew. I'm starting to like her even more. Successfully selling handkerchiefs at the local department store, and finally meeting and marrying her beloved first husband. Her first marriage was one of the greatest tests of her life. They planned their wedding, but her soon-to-be husband was offered a job. His new employer offered to pay for the entire wedding if the young couple would move the wedding date up by 3 months, so her husband could move and begin employment with the company sooner. The young couple was thrilled by the offer of a free wedding. They were married and moved to take the new job. On the exact day of Vatura's original wedding date, her young husband was killed in an accident after just 3 brief months of marriage. Heartbroken, Vatura said she remained mad at God for 15 years. Work life had to flow on for Vatura, so she went away to a prestigious beauty school in New York City in 1922. After graduation from the school and working successfully in salons, she heard that Clairol, a beauty products company, was looking for someone to travel around the U.S. to teach about their new Miss Clairol line of products. Vatura, always willing to take a risk, showed up to the job interview in an evening gown with long white gloves and proclaimed, "Clairol home hair color is so easy to use, you can apply it in an evening gown and go out later." Vatura had the job. I could just see her over there. I could see her doing that, you know. She went around to locations across the country demonstrating her the home hair color product, always dressed in an evening gown. But she did trade her white gloves for black ones for the demonstrations. Even with her faith, the white gloves showed the dye a little bit too much. So Vitura Papke came to California in 1937, and by that time, she had mended her feud with God, and she had progressed from being a Baptist to Catholicism, where she discovered her love of ritual and confession, and then had moved on to being a teacher with the Unity Church. Vitura said, "The Baptist Church taught me that God loves me. The Catholic Church taught me how to pray, confess, and forgive myself." Then she embraced the teachings of Unity and taught that for many years. Finally, she came to religious science when two people told her that she really belonged more in the science of mind. Frustrated by their comments, Vitura was determined to prove them wrong. She investigated more, took a class, and like many people in the room, once she got into class, she realized that she had finally found the teaching and knowledge she had been seeking all her life. She was licensed as a religious science practitioner in 1958. She had an office for 20-plus years at the Institute of Religious Science. For 8 years, she was the director of practitioner training at the Institute. She graduated as a minister in 1965, but she chose not to be ordained until 1989 so that she could focus on her work as a practitioner. She continued working with clients until shortly before her death. Even at the age of 94, she was still so sought after as a practitioner, clients would wait weeks to have an appointment with her. But if you had a crisis and needed her desperately, she would drop everything to work with you. On March 19, 1997, Vitura Papke made her transition. Thousands of people around the country still remember her fondly. Kathy Sue Sagerser remembers Vitura opening up each of their practitioner classes with the same affirmation. I'm going to share this with you now. "I am an irresistible magnet with the power to attract unto myself everything that I divinely desire, according to the thoughts, feelings, and mental pictures I constantly entertain and radiate. I am the center of my universe. I have the power to create whatever I mentally choose and accept. I begin choosing and mentally accepting the highest and best in life. I now choose lavish abundance for myself and for all mankind. This is a rich, friendly universe, and I accept its riches and hospitality now." Each year at the CSL convention, which is this week online here, you heard about it, the award for outstanding teacher is given out. It is named after Vitura Papke. There was some thought that a few years ago that maybe the names of the annual awards should be dropped, as few people remember who they're named after. But now we know more about Vitura Papke and what an outstanding teacher, practitioner, and light in the world she was. And so I introduce you to Vitura Papke. Yeah. So I thought that would be fun this month. We'll learn about some people that we've not heard of, or maybe we've heard of, but we don't know very much about. So here we go, a new month. I got a little story for you. So three men were hiking through a forest when they came upon a large, raging, violent river. Needing to get to the other side, the first man prayed, "God, please give me the strength to cross this river." Poof! God gave him big arms and strong legs, and he was able to swim across the river in about 2 hours, almost drowning twice. But he got there. After witnessing that, the second man prayed, "God, please give me the strength and the tools to cross the river." Poof! God gave him a rowboat, strong arms, and strong legs. He was able to row across in about an hour after almost only capsizing once. Seeing what happened to the first two men, the third man prayed, "God, please give me the strength, the tools, and the intelligence to cross the river." Poof! God turned him into a woman. She checked the map, hiked up 100 yards up the stream, and walked across the bridge. Happy Women's History Month! Ba-dum-bum. Yeah. Oh, come on, it's funny. Okay. All right, so we're starting a new month and a new theme, and so this year our overarching theme is Life is an Adventure, Live Courageously. And so each month we're looking at how to step into different aspects of our courage to live fully and embrace this life and experience such a great experience. And so this month we're talking about the courage to surrender. And so This is what I think about it. So this is where I started with this, is that, you know, when we look at how we are in life, we work really hard, right? We're all working really hard. We're trying to create something. We have this idea of what our life is supposed to be like, and we try to put it together and create what it is that we want, right? We work really hard at trying to figure it out. And sometimes we just can't figure it out. We just can't get to that picture that we have in our heads of what our life is supposed to look like. And so what do? We start to pretend that it's that. Right? We start to put a facade forward. We start to put some makeup on it. You know, we put our face on and we show up and we dress up and we do what we're supposed to do to fit the story, whatever that story is that we've been telling ourselves that we're supposed to be. And there's a disconnect from what is true on the inside. Anybody with me? Okay, so what happens is that we try really hard and we're working really hard, and so then we start to stuff our emotions and we start to deny what it is that we really want, and we start to pretend that we are okay when there's this huge disconnect from within us. And so what happens is that what we know is that where our attention goes, energy flows, right? I hate those little sayings, but where our attention goes, energy flows. And what we put our attention on expands. We know that that's a spiritual principle. And so if we are living a disconnected life and we are trying really hard to make something work that's not working, what happens? We get more of that. So we call to us more experiences that are going to show us that we have to work really hard and spin our gears and spin our wheels and not get anywhere. And so because we are afraid of showing up and looking like a failure or looking like we don't have it together or being in our mess, right? Like, hello, there are days when I don't look like this. And maybe it's today. I don't know. But there are times when we are not at our best and our most balanced or whatever we think we're supposed to be in the world, and it's a challenge for us. And so what happens is we call forth more of those experiences and we just, what? Get more frustrated, right? And we think that we are out of sync with life. Truth is, we are out of sync with life. And there's nothing that we can do to make it work. It feels like we're trying so hard sometimes. I sit with people all the time who are trying so hard to put it together, to get it together, to get ourselves to where we think we're supposed to be. But that idea of where we think we're supposed to be is not valid and is not true. We are called to be who we are and to be where we are. And so this month we're going to talk about that spiritual practice of surrender. We're moving in the courage to surrender this month, and then as we move into the Easter month, next month we're looking at the courage to trust. So surrendering and trust go hand in hand. They walked hand in hand into a place of living our divine life. When we can surrender to the moment, when we can surrender to be who we have come here to be, when we can surrender to what is in front of us, we can change it. When we can be present and acknowledge where we are, we can start to mold it. We can start to shift it. Ernest Holmes, the founder of religious science, reminds us over and over again in The Science of Mind, you begin where you are. We don't begin in this ideal of where we think we're supposed to be. And we can't do anything about where we started. We can't go back unless somebody figured out how to make that DeLorean really into a time machine. I haven't figured that out yet, if anyone's actually done that. We can't go back. So we have to start where we are. And sometimes being present with what is in front of us in this life is so scary. There's things that we can't control. And there's things that we don't understand. And there's things that feel uncomfortable. And obviously in these days, there's a lot happening in the world. And it can make us uncomfortable with being present. But it's only by being present and acknowledging where we are that we can move forward. So as we start to do that, what we're doing is we're practicing surrender. We're letting go of that fighting. And you know what I forgot? I was going to try and find, I'll do this. The other thing that reminds me of surrender is the white flag, right? Like sometimes I feel like I want to go like this. I surrender to life. I surrender. And what it is that I'm surrendering the effort that I think it takes to even get through a day. Right? You with me? Yes. So what we can see, what we can acknowledge, we can change. So this is what happens is when I generally surrender, the experience of surrendering, of letting go into the moment, it doesn't mean you're giving up on anything. It doesn't mean that you're letting go of a relationship or you're giving up on somebody else. What you're doing is you're surrendering your need to work hard to try and figure it out. Because this life is magnificent, and it is infinite, and it is divinely complex. We are so much more complex than we give ourselves credit for. And God is so much more powerful and complex than we give God credit for. So when we can practice that surrender, we are allowing that divine intelligence to have its way in our life. We are letting go of my will and allowing thy will. And that's really scary. It's really scary to surrender into a question, into something that we don't understand. But what I want to remind you is this, is that we're not surrendering to anything other than a greater part of ourselves. If we believe that there's one power and one presence that is God, and that's what we in Science of Mind believe, that there's only one thing happening here, and it is the divine life, it is God's life, and it is part of each and every one of us. And so at the core, we are all connected. We are living in this divine matrix of being, and I love the saying that we're growing up all over each other. So that's what we're doing. We're growing up all over each other. And so if that's what the truth is, there's only one, if we're surrendering to God's life, it's just a part of ourselves that's beyond our conscious awareness. You with me? Yes. So when we can surrender to something, it's nothing foreign. It's nothing outside. It's nothing like, I hope and pray it's going to come. It's a part of you. And so when we can surrender into being present and we can surrender into living that divine life and allowing this life to take us where we need to go, we are opening the door to allowing more opportunity, different perception, a new way of seeing ourselves, new ways of being that we never expected that were alive within us. But it's because we are letting go of the way we think it should be, of the way we think it ought to go, the way it's supposed to look. When we can surrender that need for it to be a certain way, we can get the true gift of it. We can get the true experience of this life. So when we surrender, we stop struggling for a specific result. I release the hold in my conscious awareness. I let go of that control freak within me who really wants it to go the way I want it to go in my own time, right? And what happens is doors open in both the inner and the outer worlds that I could never have seen. Tasks that I couldn't do become easier. And states of peace and intuition that eluded me before show up. All of a sudden, I can be in the same situation. Nothing could have changed. But I feel such a peace about the whole thing that I have more creative energy to put towards a solution rather than trying to make it not happen. Because so often we are trying to keep the danger, keep the challenge, keep the fear, whatever it is, to keep it outside the door. Well, what I'm saying is we have to welcome the fear in and be present with it, to allow it to transmute and transform into what it's there for, because everything is in our lives for a reason. Everything's there to inspire us, to support us, to guide us in realizing that we are more than we think we are. And so this teaching is throughout many spiritual traditions. I found from the Bible, it reminded me of the Epistle to the Romans, where Paul says, I beseech you, brethren, by the mercy of God, that ye present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, and be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. So he's not talking about, you know, offing ourselves. That's not what he's talking about, giving ourselves as a sacrifice. He's not doing that. What he's talking about is giving our lives over to the divine life, bringing ourselves as a living sacrifice, as a gift unto the world that is God's expression. That's what that idea is. And when we can do that, then we can open up to what the will of the divine is for our lives. There's something greater that's there for you to be and to share and to do in this world. And sometimes we want it manageable. We want it handleable. We want to be able to operate within this certain range to allow ourselves to feel safe, right? Well, I got news for you. You didn't come here to feel safe. You didn't come to this life to live a small life, to have it be handleable and manageable and so sweet. You came to be a big, huge expression of love, of light, of joy. You came to shine your light so brightly that people walking down the street need to wear shades. Gino's in the house. I feel like I need my shades, right? Right? We were here to live large, to sing our song boldly, to be that presence of love so much that people just feel it when they're in your presence. We weren't here to live small. We can't live handleable, manageable lives. We are out of control. But the thing about being out of control when you're living the divine life is that you have nothing to worry about. You say what you need to say. You be who you need to be. You do what you need to do. And you are supported and sourced. It's when we hold back, when we're hesitant, that's when we get into trouble. That's when there's some sort of blinders put on and we don't see something happening. When we are fully immersed in this life and we are fully giving ourselves to it, surrendering to this experience, you see clearly and we can allow that divine gift of God to move through us. And not only in the Bible, but I found from the Yoga Sutras, Patanjali famously describes the observance of, I'm going to try it, forgive me yogis in the room, Ishvara Pranidhana. Let's call that was right. Okay. Which literally means surrender to the Lord. As the passport to samadhi, which is the inner state of oneness, that he considers the goal of the yogic path. Among all the practices they recommend, this one is presented as a kind of ultimate trump card. If you can fully surrender to the higher will, he seems to be saying you basically don't have to do anything else, at least not in terms of the mystical practice. You'll be there however you define there. Merged in the now, immersed in the light, in the zone, returned to oneness. At the very least, surrender brings a kind of peace that you don't find any other way. And so what I know is, this is hard for so many of us because we're brought up to be doers. We're brought up to get it done, to pull up our bootstraps, right? We're Americans. That's what we're, and I'm from New England, so I come from the Puritan tradition, right? Which was definitely, you get in there and you do it, right? And so that's alive within us also, that we are made to be, to get it done. We're made to be the doers, and we're made to be the fixers. Well, maybe not the kind of fixers that we've been talking about this week, but we're made to take care of our life, right? That's what we're supposed to do. And surrendering, it feels like a failure. Surrendering our goal, our ideal of how it's supposed to be, feels like we're failing. But we're not. We're letting what wants to be come in a more powerful way. We're allowing that life to flow because it can't be controlled. Ernest Holmes says, Christ is one who surrenders a limited sense of life to the divine realization of wholeness and unity with good, spirit, and God. And the Christ, that consciousness, is alive within each and every one of us. So many of us first experience surrender during an experience with some great natural force, right? You feel surrender maybe at the ocean. For the mothers in the room, you can experience surrender during childbirth because there's a moment where you just got to surrender to the whole process. I don't want to bring that up, but you got to surrender because it's going to happen, you know? Or maybe we experience surrender when life throws us that curveball and the relationship disintegrates or the job goes away or our health status changes. Sometimes surrender happens because of a big, huge life event. And being present with that, it calls us to make a choice. We can either move into a place of trust or we can move into a place of fear. And what happens when we move into that place of fear? Let's talk about that path. We constrict, we hold back, we hunker down, and we hold on tight. Right? And so when that happens, there's no space for that divine flow. There's really no space to allow for inspiration, for our intuition to guide us. There's no way that the wisdom can speak to us. We are hunkered down, holding on. Reminds me of the first time I was on Space Mountain, holding on so hard, screaming. I was white-knuckling it. And the crazy thing is that I got off, and I got back right on and did it again. I was holding on. Why did I do it again? I did it again. I did it again. Oh, my God. You know? I haven't done Space Mountain since then. That was 1993. So, so that there's no space when we go into that place of fear. There's no space when we go into that place of constriction for that divine support. So when we move in, say we move into a place of surrender, let's look at what that looks like. Oh, well, this is what's happening. Something's coming forward. Let's see where it is. When you do that, you can open to looking around and seeing that something else is happening here that maybe I don't see. Maybe there's a piece of this experience that's taken me somewhere that I don't even see. It's around the corner, around the bend down the road. But I know that if I trust that divine life, it's going to take me where I need to go, because you know what? It always has. It's always supported you. Sometimes it may have been painful, and sometimes it may have been hard. But it's got you to this moment. And we get to be together today looking at this topic, because you are stronger than you think you are. You're connected to an infinite source of wisdom that has guided you. Whether you acted like the 2-year-old toddler that was like, I can do it myself, I don't need you, God, I don't care what you say. You know, I can do it myself. I can hear my kids still saying that. She's 11, I can still hear her from when she's 2. I can do it myself. Okay, fine, do it yourself then, that's fine. So that's what God does to us, right? When we act like petulant little toddlers, he's like, okay, do it yourself. Pretty soon we're going to come back around the bend and open and say, okay, wait, will you help me, right? And that's surrender. When we surrender and say, okay, something else is happening here. It's beyond my capabilities of understanding. And that's when things start to shift. That's when we realize that it's easier than we thought it was going to be. That's when we realize that around the bend, a new opportunity showed up that we never saw coming. That's when we open to realizing that there's something greater operating in this life than we give credit to. And that's what I call God. For me, opening into the surrendered state typically comes when I'm pushed beyond my personal capacities, right? Where it's something that's beyond my, it's not in the filing system in my head, you know? I don't have the skill or the understanding, and it's beyond me, and I get really frustrated. I get really frustrated. And so it comes to a place of what I heard someone call it, the place of impasse. I really liked that idea. By impasse, she was talking about that you're trying the best that you can to make something happen and you're failing. You realize that you simply can't do whatever it is you want to do, and you can't win the battle you're in, and you can't complete the task, and you can't change the dynamics of the situation. You get to a place of impasse. At the same time, you recognize that the task must be completed. The situation must change. And in that moment of impasse, something gives in you. And you start to trust the force within you. And so this is where our spiritual training comes in. This is where our spiritual practice comes in. We call it being prayed up, right? So we encourage everyone to have a daily spiritual practice where you're connecting with that infinite divine source, whatever you call it. But you're connecting with God on a daily basis through your meditation, through your prayers, through your spiritual study. And so if you do that on a regular basis, it becomes that foundation from which you operate when the challenges in life hit. And so you get to this place of impasse, well, you're all prayed up. And so what happens is you know that there's a force within you. Again, we're going back to Star Wars. There's a force within you that you can rely on. And so it's just like Luke Skywalker thinking that he couldn't do it. He thought, yeah, I can't take on the empire. I'm some little farm boy from some little dust planet. I can't do anything, right? But in that moment, he surrenders to the fact that he was the one. And so he stepped forward, and what happened? He did it. He did what he had to do because he trusted that force, that power, that presence, again, God, as him and in his life. There's even, most transformational moments, whether they're spiritual, creative, or personal, involve this. Intense effort, great frustration, and then letting go. And then there's a resolution, okay? So you want to see where you are in that cycle. If there's something happening in your life and you're trying really hard to make it happen, you're starting to get to that inspiration place, you know that you're in the right place, because hopefully that's going to send you to a place of surrender. Of letting go, of letting it be. Because once you can get to that, you can let it go, and then that opens the door for the inspiration to come in. There's a story about Einstein, you know, that after years of doing the math, of doing the work, of figuring it out, the theory of relativity was downloaded to him in a moment of stillness. He wasn't sitting at his desk trying to figure it. He was sitting in a place of peace. And the theory of relativity plopped into his mind. That's what we can do. We can prime the pump. We can do the work in our life. We can set our intentions and move in a specific direction. But you know the difference of creating something. I know you know this. The difference in when you're creating something and when you're trying to go in a direction that just isn't working, right? You can feel it when you're trying to effort something than allowing it. And when we're efforting and working so hard to get it done, that's when we're limiting ourselves. We need to have that balance of intention and openness and word flies out of my hand. To balance that efforting with the allowing. And we have to find the balance of surrendering into that place that is beyond our sense of limitation. So what is it? What is it that we can surrender? This is what I want us to practice this week. What are we going to surrender? Let's figure it out. We're going to surrender attachment. Surrender control. Surrender knowing or having to know. There's a lot of us that have to, I got to be in the know. I got to know. You got to, yeah. Let's surrender that need. Surrender our sense of perfection. Surrender the need to be loved. Surrender the need to be admired or appreciated, acknowledged. When we surrender that, let me tell you, when you surrender your need to be acknowledged, you get a whole heck of a lot more acknowledgement. It's how it works. Surrender the need to be the one. Or we could surrender our fears, our worries, our personal will, our doubt, or our hard feelings. And so as we practice this, three things will happen. First is we begin to live in the present moment. We're no longer bogged down by all of those that story that we've told about ourselves for our whole life. We're no longer stuck in that story. We get to be present with who we are and have all of our creative faculties together to begin to move forward. We deepen our trust and our faith as we walk with God through this life. I know it sounds kind of hokey, and it's really funny to me to stand up here and say that, but that's the most important thing, I think, for us, is to deepen our relationship and our walk with God, to know that there's something greater than we are that loves us so much, that wants our good so much, that is for us, our huge, big cheerleader, that not only is there to cheer us on, but to create what we want if we allow it. So as we deepen our walk with the divine, that starts to happen. And the third is that we experience a comfort level with ourselves. Ugh. And a freedom that we've, and a peace that we've not experienced before. That's what I want for you. Is I want you to be so at peace with yourself, with who you are, that you feel free. That's what surrender does. Surrender brings us to a place of freedom and connection that we've never experienced before. Again, as Ernest Holmes says in The Science of Mind, I surrender all my fears, those nameless fears which have beset me for such a long time, dulling my pleasure and clouding with misery and apprehension all of my days. I am now through with fear. What indeed is there for a divine and immortal being to fear? What is there? If you are the divine made manifest, an eternal, immortal, creative being, there's nothing for you to be afraid of. And so what I know for this week is that we move into a place of practicing surrender, that we begin to look at that power and that presence that's alive within us that allows us to step up in a new way and let go of that stuff that has been keeping us bound to the past and to limitation. And we move into that place of embracing the moment and experience the freedom that comes with surrender. And so I thought I'd end today with one of the another reading from Vitura Papke. So I'll invite you to close your eyes and take a breath if you're comfortable. This is her affirmation. And I'm going to share all our affirmations on the Facebook group today. So breathing into our heart space, she says this. In this moment, I know God is the indwelling light within me. It cannot depart me, for I am one with God. Truth is reigning in my heart now. I actively lean into the truth of my being. I allow myself to be guided by spirit in all endeavors and trust in the everlasting light. And so it is. Here we go.